good Saturday afternoon to you. Yeah, been a hot one out there. It's going to be a hot one this coming week, too. Just remember, gosh, if you're going to get outside and try to do anything, you've almost got to start hydrating the day before. You know you're going to be outside. If you know you're going fishing, start the day before, night before, drinking. I don't know. I like Body Armor. I've kind of gotten to be a Body Armor fan, and it seems to work. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff out there. Everybody's got their favorite, but you almost need to start the night before and stay at it the next morning during the day, whether you're hiking or fishing. And, you know, one of these 100-degree days, you probably just need to stay inside and do some planning. There you go. Just don't even get out in it and make your plans for the weekend when it appears to be a little cooler. But, you know, hey, just be careful. Just be careful. Welcome into Woods and Water, South Carolina. Hope you're having a great day. Busy week. Hopefully the last one. Taylor's got so much going on. I've had enough going on, too. And so we didn't get a show in for this week. I am doing this intro, but it's gonna be a good show. Don't turn off the radio, because my buddy Scott Laseth, who hasn't been on in a year or so, which I try not to beat these guys up all the time about coming on and give them a break, and that way when they come back on, even if we cover some of the other stuff, it's fresh and it's new. It's new to a lot of people, or you've forgotten it and have it. So I went back to June of 19. Scott and I did a show, and Scott is the sporting chef out of Folsom, California. He's got a show on called Dead Meat TV 2. Just a great guy. My goodness, he's just the nicest guy you've ever met in your life. He's been cooking essentially his whole life, and especially his wild game. And I kid you not, you're going to need a drop cloth or something if you listen to this show. But I went back, and back in 19, I didn't have to settle for heartbreaks because I was just on World Radio Show. It's funny going looking back. You know, we did like 20-something minute segments back then because it was just WGTK, and I wasn't confined to the set heartbreaks like I am now with a couple of stations online. So anyway, we went back and we pieced together a show that's going to be, it's really good. Scott is a natural on the radio, just like his motto. He's not out to make wild game cooking harder. He's out there to make it taste better, and he does a really good job of it. So that's the show today. I am going to go through with a calendar, going to talk about some of the 4th of July events that are coming up, because my goodness, it's almost the 4th of July. And give you an idea of some places to go early on, then we'll finish this up next week with some more, and hopefully you can make plans to watch some fireworks or maybe be at the beach on July the 4th, which it looks like I'm going to be on the coast July the 4th. I have a wedding in Charleston on the 3rd, and we're going to stay over that night, and I am going to be out on the beach for Salute from the Shore on July the 4th, which is going to be really fun. So get to watch the jets go up and the planes go down the coast. So stay tuned. We'll have more details on that next week. But just a reminder from the Department of Natural Resources that boaters should be aware of updated law about keeping distance on the water. And if Taylor was here, she'd have a cow, because we've been fishing a couple times and had people just go by us 30, 40 feet away, 75 feet away. There is a new 100-foot rule. So boaters and personal watercraft hitting the water this summer should be aware of changes to state law. It was signed in by March 14th by Governor McMaster. McMaster, it essentially covers the lakes in South Carolina. Operate a watercraft, specifically prop craft vessel, while upon the waters of certain lakes in excess of idle speed within 100 feet of a wharf, dock, bulkhead, or pier, or 50 feet of a moored or anchored vessel or person in the water. All other state waters operate a personal watercraft, especially prop craft or vessel, while upon all waters of this state in excess of idle speed within 50 feet of a moored or anchored vessel, wharf, dock, bulkhead, pier, or person in the water, or within 100 yards of the Atlantic Ocean coastline. The prohibitions contained in this item do not apply to an unoccupied moored vessel or watercraft, or to a person behind a vessel or watercraft who is on water skis or a floating device with the permission of the operator of the vehicle. Remember, there's also a new wake law you need to be aware of, specifically for wake boats. I don't have it here, but if you got a wake boat, you need to know that. So getting into some 4th of July stuff, the Greer, their 4th of July extravaganza in Greer City Park is going to be June 25th from 6 p.m. to 10:30. It's going to start out, they got a blood drive going from 6 to 10, a kids zone from 6 to 8, inflatables from 6 to 10, opening ceremonies at 6 o'clock, the team fast track skydiving team will be at 6:15, military tribute at 6:30, a rib eating contest at 7:15, the musical group Back Nine at 7:30, Dr. Don Sylvie at 8:35, Back Nine will be back on at 9 o'clock, and the fireworks are at 10, and they've got food vendors and whatever else ready for you after that. Oopsie. Oh, we got to mention this. Sorry. June 25th and 26th, the Ag and Art Tour is in Chester County. This is where you have, you know, you're going to a farm, most likely a certified South Carolina ag farm. You're there, you're buying fresh produce and sampling ice cream or whatever else is available. And there's artists there from locals and all. And Wilson Farms is our Cotton Hill Farms right there in Lowry, South Carolina, is one of our favorites. And so if you're out and about June 25th, 26th, Saturday 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. or Sunday 1 to 5, stop by Cotton Hill Farms on 321 in Lowry's, and Joey Wilson's got some good stuff there. Lake Murray Country, their Independence Day is going to be July the 1st. Let's see. The town of Lexington. Yeah, Independence Day in Lexington, Friday, July 1st at Ice House Amphitheater. The 246th Army Band will play a concert from 7 to 9, and there'll be fireworks show to follow. You can tune in on 93.1 FM. They'll simulcast everything. And the best viewing areas include the Ice House Amphitheater, Main Street Restaurants, Lexington Square Park, Lexington Veterans Monument, and any public parking lot in the downtown area. Be aware of the parking lots on Church Street will be closed all day. Virginia Hilton Park will close at 7 o'clock. Lake Murray's 4th of July celebration by Lexington Medical Center will be Saturday, July the 2nd. There is a boat parade if you're interested in getting in on that. If not, this is the one. Yeah, the boat parade's at 12 o'clock at Bomb Island. This is the one that they have fireworks. It's the largest in South Carolina, shooting off from Spence Island and Dreer Island. Fireworks do not launch from the park sites at the dam. You can see them from all over the lake. My goodness, it's just wherever you want to get around Lake Murray, you can see them. If you're going by boat, remember to just be careful and pay attention to your surroundings. And other boaters. The Peach Festival is underway. I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. It's if they firm up thing for the 62nd annual Peach Festival there in Lexington. Let's see. The next one on the list. Oh, Salute from the Shore. Yeah. We'll get more into that one. That's on July the 4th. There's also the fireworks blast in Charleston. So next week we will finish up the 4th of July stuff that's happening around the state. And you can make your plans from there. But I want to get a few out there because I know it's a long list and I always run short of time. So anyway, hang in there. We're going to talk to Scott Laceth about cooking wild game and all after the break. So more on the other side. Y'all hang on. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Appreciate you tuning in. And I'm going to give you a fair warning right here, right now. If you like food and you like cooking wild game, I don't know if you want to get your
a drip rag or whatever and get ready to bail the scuppers in your mouth, because you're going to get hungry. Your mouth's going to start watering, because all the way from Folsom, California, Scott Laceth, the sporting chef, joins us on Woods and Water. Scott, thanks for doing this. Hope you're doing great. And what are we going to cook today?
Man, whatever's on sale. I know we've got turkey season. Hopefully, those who are listening, I've got a couple of turkeys in the freezer, yeah. And we can talk about some of that ground deer meat you probably have too much of.
Okay.
Fish, whatever, cast iron, I'm here for you. Well, let's talk about whatever happens in South Carolina, one of my favorite states.
I hear you, because you're here. I mean, in fact, just a couple of weeks ago, the Outdoor Network, Sportsman Channel, ran your SCWA episode where you filmed here at the South Carolina Waterfowl Association.
So yep, my son has been to camp there a couple times. I've done cooking schools there. We were there last December for the opening, the second opener, and had a great shoot there. Managed to kill my limit after everybody else left the pond, and I really like hanging out there at Camp Woody at SCWA.
That is one camp. When you talk to those guys down there, those kids, my favorite part is the inner tube in the mud puddle, you know?
Right.
That's the way I grew up, you know, and it just reeks of fun down there. It really
does.
Well,
you can do – the reason I sent my son there instead of somewhere in California is you can do more good stuff at Camp Woody than you can most other places.
I'm sure.
And I've watched it grow. You know, they've done an incredible job. David Walicki, the founder there, has done a great job over the last 25 years of developing this into an education, fun, great opportunity for people that can get a chance to go to Camp Woody.
Yep. And camp runs all summer. And then they got on the flip side, they got the Camp Loophole, which runs through the school year, that continues some of what Camp Woody does all year long.
Oh, it does. And that's kind of the next level where, you know, you actually get to participate a lot more in, the conservation efforts and what it takes to identifying plants and animals and those kind of things. Yeah, the Camp Leopold is a great, great deal.
It's a good one, and it's right here in South Carolina. That's the really cool thing about it. So you do make it here every once in a while and keep a tab on what all is going on. One of your favorite things you told me maybe the first time we ever talked, I'm not here to make your cooking more complicated. I'm just here to make it better. And it seems like...
The inspiration for me with the cooking isn't to out-chef other people. What I found a few decades ago is that, you know, there are so many people out there that say, man, I love to duck hunt, but I just don't like eating duck.
Oh, man.
Or I love to catch fish, but, you know, and then they make that, you know, paper mill smell face when they talk about eating fish. And it's not the fish, and it's not the duck. It's what they're doing with it.
Right. And that's where you come in, and you've been doing this a while.
Yeah, more than I'd like to admit.
Oh, no, it's all good. And folks, if you have a chance, get on the Sporting Chef website. It tells you more about it. It's got a sampling of game recipes. You can even get, and I noticed this, you can even get a free wild game ebook.
Oh yeah! If you sign up for our newsletter, we'll send you an ebook. We don't wear you out with newsletters. We send out maybe six a year at the most. You know, we don't get tired of too many emails, right?
Okay.
So, stay with us. I've got a show on Sportsman Channel, Sporting Chef, and then the Dead Meat Show is back. We just got done chasing lionfish, snakeheads, and rays in Florida last week.
Okay.
We went in search of wild cows on the Big Island of Hawaii. They have feral cattle there.
Cool.
And one of the coolest things that we did find, we shot a pig.
Okay.
Now, you know how an old wild boar can have a bit of a pronounced aroma to
you
it.
You think?
And we normally cut the fat off of those things, right?
Okay.
It's best to cut the fat off into the fat. We shot pigs that were... every afternoon, the property owner would put a big pile of macadamia nuts.
Huh.
And I'm telling you, all you need is a truckload of macadamia nuts, which will cost you about $400 a pound by the time you get your pig out.
Okay.
But it was the best pig I've ever had. The fat on it was white, and creamy. We actually added the fat to the grind when making sausage.
Oh, my goodness.
And you don't normally do that with an old wild pig, right?
Now, macadamia, I assume you're on a macadamia nut farm down there.
Well, this guy has access to a macadamia nut processing place,
okay.
And he just goes in and sweeps the floor and gets whatever's on the floor, loads up his truck, and feeds the pigs that come out of the woods with him. And, you know, you definitely are what you eat, and it's a whole different category of pig.
Oh, those pigs have elevated to a different one altogether. You're exactly right.
Right.
Look, we just finished up turkey season in South Carolina. You mentioned it earlier. It was you talked around and people had a good season. Some people said the turkeys were absent or they were silent. But I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that have a few turkeys in the freezer, like you said. What you know, most people breast it out. We do it with doves, yep. We do it with quail, we do it with ducks, geese, turkeys. I mean, that's a good part, and I'm sure you can talk about cooking those. But about the whole, using the whole turkey, how do you go about doing that, and how are you going to fix the legs or whatever else left over?
You know, and you don't have to necessarily, you know, plucking a turkey, as you know, isn't the easiest task. And that's going to add a lot of time to your processing. If you just want to peel it, that's fine if you don't feel like plucking it. But when you just breast it out and you throw the rest away, what I find, people will breast it out, throw the rest of the way, and then they'll make a recipe and throw in a bouillon cube or a can of chicken stock.
Oh.
Instead, if you take those wild turkey parts that aren't the breast fillets and you put them into a roasting pan, and I'm talking legs, thighs, carcass,
okay.
Put it into a roasting pan with some celery, carrot, onion, and you can use the butt ends and the peels and any of
right.
that stuff. Brown the whole thing in a 400-degree oven. Dump it all into a big stock pot. Cover it with cold water. You can throw in some bay leaves, garlic, herbs, doesn't matter. Bring it up to just under a boil. Leave it uncovered. Let it simmer all night long, low heat, and then pour the whole thing through a colander.
Yeah.
Pull the big parts out, and then I like to pour it through a colander again with some cheesecloth to further get the little parts out. You've got this incredible wild turkey stock.
Oh, wow.
That you can use to make soups, stews, whatever. You can take those legs and thighs and braise them. You want to brown them, and then you put them into a roasting pan with about an inch or so of liquid. And that can be wine, chicken stock, doesn't matter. Throw some vegetables in there. And eventually, those wild turkey legs, at least the thighs, will get really, really tender, and then you can strip all the meat off. If you cook a whole bird, it doesn't work. If the breasts are just done, if you get it to where you can actually eat those thighs, the breasts are thawed, are sawdust.
Okay.
So cook them separate. Same thing applies to pheasants, anything else that you're cooking. Don't waste the rest of that bird. You can take that stock and concentrate it, put it into Ziploc bags, put it flat in the freezer so that it freezes like a book.
Oh, wow. Yep.
And then you can just stack them in, and you can just break off a corner of that stock anytime you need to make some sauce, and you're not wasting the rest of that turkey.
And that's what you ought to do. If you're going to go out in the wild and take part of the natural resource, you need to make sure it's used.
Yeah, to me, it's wanton waste to just use the breast of the birds, whether it's a duck or goose or a turkey, and not use the rest of it. And a lot of people just don't know, you know. So they've taken turkey, and they chunk it up, and they throw it into a crock pot with a can of cream of mushroom soup, and it tastes just like cream of mushroom soup. But to me, you can do that with a chicken. Don't do that with your wild turkey. And if your turkey breast is dry, all you've done is overcooked it. If you take that turkey breast and you brine it 6 to 8 hours, and that can be a commercial brine, or you can just take half a gallon of water, half cup each, kosher salt and brown sugar. That's going to add moisture. It's going to add salt. Don't cook it past about 150, 155 degrees. As it sits there, when you take it out, it'll keep cooking. It's not chicken. The salmonella danger isn't there. If your turkey's dry, all you've done is cooked it too long.
No salmonella in turkeys?
Nah, not in the wild turkey.
And
I shot a few of them this year. We got lucky here. I shot my three, so I had a good year.
You did have a good year. You did have a good year. So you're using all of it. You're making the stock. When you pull the stock out, what are you using the stock for down the road?
You can use it for anything that you would use for chicken broth.
Okay.
Instead of bouillon, and it tastes so much better.
Yeah.
And you're going to, if you want, you can skim the fat off, but there's not a whole lot of fat on there.
Right.
And the more you cook that stock down, the more concentrated it is. So you can have a concentrated stock, takes up less room in your freezer. Some people put them into ice cube trays.
Okay.
And then once they're frozen, you just break them into a Ziploc bag, grab an ice cube with a turkey stock cube. And if you're sauteing some turkey or chicken or quail or whatever, you throw one of those cubes in there, and just it's going to add a whole different dimension of flavor.
Gosh, that does sound good. Oof. Told you, folks. Start bailing the scuppers. You mentioned something about cooking breast fillets on a turkey. What are you going to do there?
First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to butterfly it. If it's a big animal, you know, they're really thick.
Right.
So if you cook it in its natural state when it's an inch and a half or so thick, by the time it gets to the center, it's very often overcooked on the outside. So if you're going to cook the whole thing, you want to use lower heat. Make sure you add a little bit of moisture to it. So if you're doing it on a grill, you want to baste it often. The best thing I like to do is to butterfly them so that they're about half as thick.
Okay.
And then lightly pound them so that they're of even thickness. Then after you brined it, you can put it into a little marinade with some olive oil, garlic, salt, and pepper. Slap it on the grill, and again, follow that meat thermometer. When it's done for me, it still has just a tinge of pink on the inside, and I'm going to let it rest for a few minutes. And as it's resting, you're going to lose that pink, and it's going to be perfectly cooked. You can cut it up into strips and fry it and all that, and that's good too.
Okay.
But keep the thickness even so that it'll cook evenly, and you're not going to have an undercooked and an overcooked part of a turkey breast. And what's really cool about them is you can butterfly them and stuff them with a bunch of stuff, too. You can put in prosciutto, cheese, fresh basil, tomato, roll the whole thing up, tie it like you would a roast.
Okay.
Brown it, and then pop it into the oven, a 350-degree oven. When that temperature gets about 155 in the center, pull it out, let it rest, and you can cut it open, and it makes this roulade, you know, whole kind of stuffed wild turkey thing that's really good.
Oh, boy. And letting you go was wrong. And maybe I know you got your radio on. So this is my bad comeback song. Oh, yeah. I know I said I wouldn't miss ya. I said I wouldn't miss ya, girl. That does sound good. You know, you mentioned olive oil. What purpose does olive oil serve when you're grilling or when you're doing something in a pan? Because every recipe you see calls for it. I don't know that a whole lot of people know why you use it.
Well, for me, it's flavor. What I do a lot of times is I'll mix olive oil and butter, and the olive oil will give it a little bit higher burning point, and then you get that flavor of butter. But there's just a different flavor between olive oil and vegetable oil. If all you're going to do is brown it,
yeah,
any kind of oil works.
Okay.
If you want a little bit more flavor, you're going to get more flavor out of the olive oil. And, of course, the better olive oils, the extra virgin olive oils,
right,
that are from the first and second pressing, those are going to have more olive oil flavor. If you're not looking for olive oil flavor, buy the cheap stuff, the Thomas grade, or there's olive oil mixed with canola oil.
Okay.
And that'll still give you a little bit of flavor. If all you're doing is browning, you don't need to waste your money on expensive olive oil.
Okay. All right. Because everything, you know, every recipe you have or you see, you know, olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, and I just don't know that people know exactly why. But it's
it's a matter of preference, but if you don't want to fry in olive oil because it has too low of a burning point.
Okay.
That's why we use peanut oil for
cooking. Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. You know, turkeys, you could go on. We could talk about this forever, and we normally do. Take just a moment. before we take this break and all, talk about cast iron cooking. I know one of your sponsors is Camp Chef, and I don't do a whole lot with cast iron, but I know there are a lot of people who are going back to it and using cast iron more and more these days. And I know there's a process for curing a cast iron and then cleaning a cast iron. Could you tell us a little bit about how to do both of those?
You know, the process is infinitely simpler than people think it is. And if you buy cast iron now, it comes pre-seasoned. But if you happen to have one that's been out in the shed for a while and there's a bunch of rust on it, heat it up to 400 degrees, and that's going to get a lot of that rust off. And then you can take a wire brush to it. I don't care how much you've abused your cast iron. You can always bring it back to life. Get a wire brush on the end of your drill motor, get all that old rust off, and then wipe it out really good. I use a cast iron conditioner from Camp Chef. You can use palm oil. You can use vegetable oil and just rub it in there. Don't soak it. Don't bury it in oil. Just a nice thin coating.
Okay.
Pop it back into that 400-degree oven, and in about an hour, it's going to glaze that oil on the outside.
Right.
And you now have a nonstick, brought back to life cast iron. It's infinitely simpler than you think it is.
That is.
And when you go to store it, don't put a tight-fitting lid on there, because the oil that's in there can go rancid on you. So you want to make sure that it gets to breathe.
Okay.
You know, the cast iron's very porous.
Right.
It's my go-to cookware. It's what I use at home. I don't travel with it because it's a little heavy.
Airline baggage fees will eat you up on that one, won't it?
Yeah, it does.
We, just a little short story. We go up to the Chattooga River and camp every once in a while. Used to do it a lot more before kids got older and people got busier. But one of the coolest things at night was my cousin's husband would take Granny Smith apples and some cake batter and I don't know what all, and he would put it in a Dutch oven, and we'd have Dutch oven apple cobbler out of just a cast iron Dutch oven, and it was just so good. Oh, it was so good.
If you ever go to a Dutch oven cook-off and I've been to a bunch of them where they do incredible stuff, anything you can do in an oven, you can do in a Dutch oven.
Oh, wow.
And so for people that aren't familiar with it, I've seen, dessert cook-offs and cheesecakes and all this stuff like you're talking about. It's so much easier, and again, the curing is simple. Anything you can do in an oven, you can do in a Dutch oven.
One of Scott's pet peeves, if he has any pet peeves, is people like me who grind up way too much deer meat. So go ahead, Scott. Go ahead and pound on me a little bit about grinding up too much ground venison.
You know, if I had a dollar for every time I heard, just give me the loins and the tenderloins and grind everything else into burger or sausage or whatever, it kills me.
Does that just make you just... Yeah. Wretch.
I mean, if you've never had deer shanks, slow cooked deer shanks that just fall right off the bone, you have to tie a string around them to keep them from falling off the bone. You're going to think, boy, I wish these deer had eight legs so I could get more shanks out of them.
Let me stop you right there. When the average person goes to a processor, is the processor going to know where the shank is?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If he doesn't know where the shanks are, then get a different processor.
Okay. All right. I'll process at home.
But what happens, you take an average-sized animal and you take those hindquarter muscles and grind them, you're wasting a whole bunch of meat. If you take that hindquarter, bone it out, remove each muscle, the eye of round looks like it's going to be tender, but it's not. That one, go ahead and grind that part, or slice it really thin for a stir fry. But those other muscles in that hindquarter, if you just don't overcook them, you slice them across the grain when you go to serve it. Very often, and your deer in South Carolina are as good as they can get. I mean, they're good tasting deer. And if that's not the case for you, you're probably cooking it too long.
Okay.
But if you take one of those hindquarter muscles, put a little olive oil, salt, and pepper, slap it on a grill, slice it across the grain, but don't go past 135-degree internal temperature. That thing's going to melt in your mouth. If you found that your deer steaks from the hindquarter are tough and chewy, I'm going to keep repeating myself, you're just cooking it too long. So do that. Put some fresh sautéed mushrooms on top. Tell everybody it's loin, and they won't know the difference. I guarantee it. Stop grinding all that deer meat. And when you do go to grind it,
yes,
if you want to get rid of some of that stuff that's in your freezer now, be a little bit more creative. Anything you can do with ground beef, you can do with ground venison.
Okay.
I usually, when I grind mine, I add pork shoulder to it.
Okay.
That's, to me, that pork butt has the perfect amount of fat. I'm going to put about 25% pork shoulder to my 75% lean deer, and it's the best burger ever.
And at that point, you don't have to add anything else to keep it together, right?
Salt, no, that'll hold together much better. It'll fall apart. It'll be more likely to fall apart if you don't add some fat to it.
Right, yeah.
And that's why we make a lot of chili and that kind of stuff,
because
it's very forgiving, and it falls apart, and it's cooked all the way. And again, if you're not okay with medium rare, boy, I can't help that. I mean, you got to go low and slow at that point. You can turn it all into pot roast.
Okay.
But I want everybody to take 15 seconds out of their life if they said, I can't eat it. There's too much blood. And by the way, that's not blood. If you just don't cook it quite so long, take 15 seconds out of your life, take a bite of lesser cooked venison, and you'll find just how much better it tastes than that overcooked one.
Well, I mean, a medium rare or a medium steak, it tastes better than a well done too. So it's not that much different from a steak.
It does to me. And one of the questions that I ask people when they have a problem with how their deer tastes is, I'll say, you go to a restaurant, how do you order your steak? And if they go medium well or well done, I go, deer doesn't work that way. There's no fat in there, so it's not very forgiving.
Yeah.
And so 10 times less fat than beef. So if you'll never see any marbling on your venison steak that's left over the next day that you pull out of the refrigerator, because there just isn't any fat on there.
Right.
So quit cooking it so long, you got a whole different deer.
All right. You sent me something that said pulled deer shoulder. This interests me.
Instead of breaking down that shoulder, take the whole shoulder, rub it with olive oil, your favorite seasoning. The olive oil is going to help brown it. Seasoning is going to give it flavor. If you want to wrap it up in plastic after you do that, leave it in the refrigerator for a little while.
Okay.
The flavor will be a little better, but really all that's going to do is season the outside. Brown it, roasting pan, celery, carrot, onion, a little beef broth or game broth in there, cover it up with foil, 300, 325 degrees in about 8 hours. And make sure that you keep enough liquid in there so that you'll get that steamed heat.
Okay.
In about 8 hours, you'll be able to pull that shoulder bone out, and it comes out clean, and the meat just falls off, just like it would like with pulled pork. But if it doesn't, make sure you add a little liquid and keep cooking. It'll happen. So it makes it's so much easier than trying to break down a shoulder into burger or usable pieces.
Okay.
Let the oven do the work. You can do the same thing in your smoker. Just like if you were to do a pork shoulder, if you leave it in there until it starts to soften up, you can wrap it up with foil, put some barbecue sauce in there, and throw it back in the smoker, and that deer shoulder will eventually again be tender, just like.
Working 6 days a week, wearing holes in the soles of the shoes on my feet. Been dreaming of getting away since I don't know. Ain't no better time than now for Mexico.
Let's talk a little fish, and I don't really know where to start because there's so much you can do. So I'm just going to let you, all right, here's one that I always get. How do you keep your fish fresh?
Well, the vacuum sealer by far is the best way to do it. Now, what a lot of people have experienced when they vacuum seal their fish or anything that's a little bit on the moist side, is, you know, you're always hoping, you know, you'll put a little paper towel in there so that it doesn't, so that you get a good seal. And if you start freaking out when you see that fish juice going into the chamber on the vacuum sealer, freeze it first. If you've got fillets, put them on a sheet pan and freeze it first. As soon as it's just frozen, then you vacuum seal it, and you'll find that it has a really, really tight seal that's not going to leak. Fish doesn't get better with age in the freezer. So I use mine. You know, I've got Food Saver Game Saver is a sponsor of mine. And they claim, you know, keep your fish. It's good for 2 years, that kind of thing. I'm using my fish within 3 months. And once you've thawed it, or even if you bring home fresh fish, keep it wrapped in 2-ply paper towels. And what that does is that wicks away that fishy juice that you get in fish. You know, if you've got fillets and you got them in a Ziploc bag in your refrigerator, you'll notice that eventually they'll be floating in this pinkish fish juice.
Right, yes.
Doesn't help the flavor of the cooked fish. So if instead you wrap it in 2-ply paper towels, and whenever those paper towels get moist, you rewrap it. That way, when you put the fish in the skillet with your white wine and your butter and who knows what, it's going to absorb the flavor that you're adding to the fish instead of competing with all this funky fish juice. You'll notice when you go to freeze your fish, you don't have all that funky fish juice in it. And yet when you, at once it's thawed, where did this come from? Right?
Right.
Don't just pour the juice out, dry the fish off. If you want to season it, then it'll make a whole lot more sense. And you're not competing with all that fish juice. And then just like everything else, if you cook it too long, it's not going to taste nearly as good.
No. And fish seem to be really, really, there's a fine line between too much and not enough. It's the sweet spot's real thin.
Right, right. And if your fish is fishy, you know, my fish isn't fishy. And when it comes right out of the water or comes right out of the ocean, it's not fishy at all. It's how you handle it is when we start getting the funky fish aroma to it, or the flavor to it. If it's not quite right, it's been mishandled. So, you know, you were talking about shell crackers and the crappie, and then I love to fry those whole.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, scale them, gut them.
Yep.
On my Sporting Chef website, I've got a pistachio crusted crappie or bluegill or something along those lines, and you just fry the whole thing, and you know those fins taste like potato chips when they're fried. And you can just pull the meat right off it. It's a little more work.
Sure.
Another thing that crappie's good for is to make crappie cakes, just like you do crab cakes.
Huh.
You cook the crappie, you pull the meat off, use it like it's blue crab meat. Give it a little squeeze to get whatever kind of juice there is on there to dry it out.
Okay.
And if you use your favorite crab cake recipe with that light, white, flaky crappie meat, it tastes just like a crab cake.
Wow.
If you butterfly a shrimp, dust it with flour, leave the tail on it, and you build your crappie cake around that butterflied shrimp, that's pretty cool, too. You got the combo deal, and it looks like a big shrimp cake, but it's actually crappie with the shrimp surprise in the center.
My goodness. This is what you get when you do this a long time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been doing it for a while. Yeah.
Okay, so crappie. Well, it's crappie here. It's crappie in California. Like crab meat. Wow, I did not know that.
Well, think about it. Right? I mean, if you've got leftover crappie, that it's, you know, it's that light, flaky meat,
sure.
Just like if you've got lump crab meat.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of, it's just like that body meat you get on a blue crab, and you season it however, Old Bay or whatever it is y'all use there, and it tastes just like crab meat.
Wow. Okay. All right. I'm starting to really bail here. This is not good. Fish recipes. We talked about it, and I grew up fishing with my granddaddy in a little farm pond over in Chester. And, you know, we did. He used to clip the fins. Now, my dad never liked his clipping fins, so once I started cleaning the majority of them, fins on, and you fry them up, and you eat those like potato chips. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
And we fried them whole, you know, and you just forked one side and clean what you can off, flip them over and fork the other side. And if you wanted to pull the bones out, the bones pull right out. So
yep.
Going a little bit beyond that, what would you do with a nice mahi fillet?
You know, and the mahi is so versatile. You can grill it, broil it, pan sear it. I like my mahi, and this won't surprise you, a little bit on the undercooked side. You know, you could do a speaking of macadamia nuts, you know, any kind of nut, whatever's available.
Okay.
If you take a little bit of egg wash, and I like to put a little Dijon mustard in there, and you take the mahi and you press it into that egg wash, then you've got a bunch of chopped up macadamia nuts or almonds or whatever it is, whatever's on sale.
Okay.
And you press that into it, press it down into the chopped up nuts.
Okay.
And you can season it if you want, put a little jalapeno, that kind of thing in there. Then you just put it into a saute pan with, again, half olive oil, half butter, and let it get a lightly brown first. That's going to get a little bit more flavor.
Okay.
Put that nut side down first into that. And once the nuts are lightly browned, take your spatula, flip it over real easy. And once it's done on both sides, take it out. You can make a pan sauce with what's left. You can put a little bit of fresh butter into that same saute pan, maybe some tomatoes, some basil, a little bit of garlic, big squeeze of lemon, and you drizzle that sauce right on top of that nut-crusted mahi, and it's really good.
No kidding. Oh, wow.
And simple. It's
yes.
Simple stuff.
Stuff.
It's not, these aren't any obscure ingredients. I'm not trying to out-chef anybody.
Right.
I just want you to know that what they do in restaurants isn't all that different than what you can do at home.
Gotcha. You know, you mentioned, you know, how simple things are. Is there one thing out there, a seasoning or a spice or, you know, whatever, that's overused cooking wild game? And I know that's a hard one to say.
Well, you know, there's the one that I get from Camp Woody that they've been using there for 25 years for South Carolina waterfowl is five spice. Now, this is a personal least favorite.
Okay.
But they have a five spice duck there that everybody raves about except for me. But I've found that people overuse heat a lot. They'll use a lot of hot sauce. And we all know people who won't eat anything without hot sauce.
Right.
And I'm not one of them. I want to taste my food. And, you know, people are more predisposed than others. They can eat ghost peppers and eat jalapenos like they're pickles.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them. I like to taste a little heat, but I like my heat balanced with a little sweet. But, you know, that's just my least favorite personal one. But, you know, you can always add heat. You can always add salt. But if you put too much of either one of them on there, it's kind of hard to go back.
I gotcha. An underused spice, whatever.
A little salt. And I'll tell you what I do, whether it's fish or upland game, I like to add a squeeze of fresh lemon or fresh lime.
Okay.
What it does is it's like a natural MSG that stimulates the taste buds, and it brings out the other flavors. You'll be surprised at just how different your wild turkey tastes if just before you serve it, you put a big squeeze of lemon juice on there, and it adds a high note, and it accentuates all the other flavors that you've added to it.
He's good. He's good, people. You need to listen to what he says.
No, I've just done it a whole bunch.
I've just been doing it forever.
He's just the old guy. That's all it is.
One of your other sponsors, High Mountain Seasonings, and they've got
yep.
a ton of seasonings out there. And a lot of people here, and we're going to go back to venison, because a lot of people here will do venison sausage or pork sausage when they kill a wild pig or something other. Is there one of those High Mountain Seasonings you would use over the other for that sort of stuff?
You know, the venison rub is what I use the most of for any of the antlered game. What High Mountain also has is they've got the sausage kits with a million different flavors that you can make snack and sticks, any kind of sausage. You don't need any special equipment. You can use a food processor to make it. If you decide you want to get into making sausage, then I would highly recommend getting a vertical stuffer and a grinder, and you'll be amazed at how much good stuff you can make well, say using that ground meat you got instead of
chili.
Yeah, and something besides chili. My overall favorite that I use the most of the high mountain stuff,
okay,
is their salmon rub.
Ah.
And again, it's really citrusy and herbal and doesn't have a whole lot of salt, but you're going to taste orange, lemon, lime, herbs, and it works on just about anything, but that's I wear that stuff out.
Cool. Oh, wow. All right. Well, if people want to know more about you, Scott, where do they go to find out, I guess, your website, social media, and then what TV, the Sportsman Channel, where else can they see your programming?
SportingChef.com is where you'll find most of the recipes. If you go to the Ducks Unlimited website, ducks.org, I've been their cooking editor there for the last 12 years. There's videos, there's recipes. I've got a blog on Winchester. If you go to the Sportsman Channel website, it'll tell you where to find the Sporting Chef show. Sporting Chef runs first and second quarter. The okay. Dead Meat show, where we do python, iguana, and stuff most people don't eat. That's third and fourth quarter. Okay. Fourth quarter of this year, we've got all new dead meat shows, including that pistachio pig from the Big
okay.
Island of Hawaii.
Yeah.
You know, I'm out there. You'll see Sporting Chef is on Sportsman Channel, yep. And so is Dead Meat. And, you know, people can always find me. We've got a YouTube channel.
Ah.
People are sending me messages all the time. If you go to Sporting Chef YouTube, if you don't get TV, there's My Outdoor TV is the streaming app that Sportsman Channel Outdoor Channel has.
Okay.
Where you can watch a whole bunch of shows from Sportsman Outdoor and the World Fishing Network.
And that's it for another week. See you back here. Make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. And don't forget the camera. Back with more Woods and Water South Carolina next Saturday. On Carolina.